We'll just take a collective deep breath. Lots of hard-hitting messages there, but lots of positive things as well. I'm going to ask Mark to take over the mic that isn't working again, Mark.
Hello.
For our panellists to come and take their seats.
Hello.
As we move towards the...
that one is on. It's just needs turning up a little bit. There we go. Could I ask the panel to come and take their seats? Thank you. Now, do we have a couple of people with microphones who can position themselves on the side? That would be lovely. Thank you. Charles, if I can give that to you. Good evening, everybody. I'm Mark Tattersall. I'm the Artistic Director here at Dorchester Arts. I am purely here to moderate this discussion after what I'm sure you'll agree was a completely extraordinary film. And as they said at the end, this is a film which is both extraordinarily shocking and extraordinarily revealing, but incredibly hopeful in many other ways. And what I think we're here for tonight, really, is to talk about that positivity and about positive change and things that can be done. And if that can be the tenor of this discussion, then I think that's what we'd like to hear. And it's a chance for you to have your voice, and it's a chance for us to speak to some people who have influence. Because this is something which can only be done if those two halves come together, if you, the people, and the people with influence come together to make change. And so what I'd like to do to start is just to ask each member of the panel to introduce themselves again, just so that you know who's who, and just to say very, very briefly how the organisation you're here representing has influence or potential influence over some of the things we've heard tonight. Charles.
Thanks very much indeed, Mark. My name's Charles Watts. I'm chair of Dorset Climate Action Network, which is a bunch of volunteers, Dorset-wide, trying to support community action to reduce carbon footprints and restore nature across Dorset. So what it may surprise you is that there are over 200 local community organisations across Dorset in the environmental and climate sphere, all trying to do this sort of thing in their own way. And you know, what we'd like to do as Dorset Can is to try and support them as best we can. So we have a number of high-profile projects of our own, but we also have a lot of networking that we do, and we have a big event once a year called the Dorset COP, which this year is going to be at Kingston Moorhead in collaboration with Coastal and College. And we bring all these groups together to try and get some action on climate and environmental matters. Where I think perhaps we can help is in local action. So some of this is going to be solved by Parliament and by councils, but some of it is going to be solved by us, from community groups, from the ground upwards, and we would like to support you wherever you are, whatever you want to do.
Thanks, Charles. Edward.
I'm Edward Morello. I'm the Member of Parliament for West Dorset. It's my job to be your voice in Parliament and talk about the issues that matter to you. And occasionally I get licensed to talk about the issues that matter to me. And sometimes those things align, which right now on this subject is certainly one that does. My background is in renewable energy. And in Parliament I am the co-chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Net Zero, the chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Climate Technology, and the vice-chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Water Pollution. I think I see my role in Parliament, as well as reflecting your voices, is to make the government go faster and better on climate policy, be more ambitious, help secure an environment in which British companies can thrive in this space, that the UK can be a leader when it comes to carbon reduction. I'm a something of a one-man army when it comes to greenhouse gas removal, to the point where the government asked me to launch their independent greenhouse gas removal report last month. But also to bring parliamentarians who share similar views on these subjects together to lobby as a caucus. I am a backbench MP of the third largest party, but I think it was Boris Johnson said when the herd moves, it moves And when we can get a groundswell of parliamentary support for stuff, we can get stuff done. And it's wonderful when we do.
Thanks. Nick.
Thanks, Edward. So I'm Councillor Nick Ireland. I represent Crossways Ward, but I'm also a leader of the council. And I also hold the climate and nature and environment portfolios because I took them myself because they're so important. As we saw in the film, this isn't something that's happening somewhere else or sometime in the future. It's happening now, and it's happening here, and it's happening in Dorset, and it's happening in Dorchester. So it's our rivers, our homes, our infrastructure. They're already under increasing pressure from heavier rainfall, from flood, and from more extreme weather. And our farmers are facing longer dry spells, and our vulnerable residents are struggling in the heat. And at the Climate Change Committee, the government's Climate Change Committee, a couple of weeks ago, had a report out. And they are clear, and they are in basically agreement with what you've just seen. That the risks are not just coming, they are already here, and we are not prepared. So that means that something is urgent. It's not abstract, it's not optional, it's something we must act on now. And I want to be absolutely clear tonight that Dorset Council is on this. We are strengthening flood and coastal resilience. We are including losing the planning system where we can, and it does need to get better to ensure that new development is safer and fit for climate change. And we are protecting ourselves against heat waves in terms of restoring nature and developing a climate adaptation policy. But what this film does make clear, and it can't be left to councils or governments alone. This is about all of us. It's about the choices we make now. So the ask of you tonight, and Chris Packham made it fairly clear, is you need to stay engaged. You need to be part of the conversation that follows. And you need to think about the role that you can play, not just you, but your community, your organisation, your family, in preventing this crisis. Because this is ultimately about what Dorset we leave behind. Most of us won't be here in 50 years' time. It's the safety of our communities, it's the strength of our local economy, and it's the future of our own children that they will inherit. So we need to act together, and we need to do it now.
Thanks. Les.
Thank you. I'm Councillor Les Fry, Dorchester Town Council, currently the Mayor, but I'm also a Dorset Councillor. I found the film fascinating, frightening, stimulating, call it what you want. It's ironic today that there's been a flood event held at Stratton Village Hall that I went out to, and we had the flooding back along in parts of Dorchester around there. I know that Dorchester Town Council is very much, and all my fellow councillors are committed to doing what we can to help Dorchester become a better place, a safer place, and be prepared and adapt for the future. I'm also an ex-dairy farmer, sheep farmer, so I've still got contacts within the farming industry, and I see the impact of some of the climate changes on that, whether it's too wet, too dry. Farmers always moan, and the weather is never right for them anyway. But this is going to be even more dynamic.
Thanks. And lastly, Mike, over to you.
Thank you very much. I'm here wearing several hats, but I've got to point out, my main hat I'm wearing is as Lord of Tennant of Dorset, which is a totally apolitical view. But I'm also a medical doctor and realised that actually every part of that film we could bring back to health. But also I'm a father of three children. And more importantly, I'm a grandfather of eight grandchildren. And I'm worried about them. What this film, I do think, has brought out is there is hope. And if you haven't, do read two books about hope, one by the late Pope Francis, but the more recent one by Jane Goodall, that we've got to have hope. But wearing my Lord Lieutenant hat, and therefore representing the monarch, do look at another film, which is Finding Harmony, The King's Vision. Because I think the key word is harmony. It's not a new word. It was introduced way back in Greek times, Socrates, Aristotle, Plato, etc. But it's so important. And in my mind, it's only three letters that make harmony important. Because if you don't have harmony, O-N-Y, you take away three letters and you have harm. And if you don't have harmony, you add three letters and we have disharmony. And how I look at it is, I am not Michael Dooley. I am an ecosystem. There are more bacteria, viruses, and fungi in me than there is me. And if I don't have harmony in those, I have disharmony within my own health. So we've got to look after ourselves first. Then we've got to look after the environment. And I think the other film that is coming out, I'm involved with, called Infertility, is we've got to think about the next generations to come. In infertility, research done by a colleague of mine, Richard Leach, has shown that environmental pollution is not only affecting our health, but you've got to remember the egg that made you was in your grandmother. And we've now shown in sheep, there's your sheep possibly, that the fertility of the ewes now have been directly affected by the diet your grandmother ate when she was pregnant with your mother. So it's going down three generations. So I'm totally apolitical, but I think wearing my hat as Lord Lieutenant, we've got to bring harmony back into our own life, into community's life. And we're not part, we are part of nature. We're not working with nature. We're all part of nature. But do look at the film, Amazon Prime.
Thank you all so much. That's, I think, more positivity, because I think what we've established from that is that we have people here who organise, who influence, who can help with this process, who care, and who have knowledge. And what we're going to do now is hear your voices and your questions for these people, or your comments on the film and your feedback on that film. So it's really over to you, as Chris Packham said. So can we have a first question from someone, or a first comment? And Anna Friday.
What are the chances?
If you wait for the, if you just wait for the microphone, if you would, thank you.
I wanted to ask what the chances of that going on national television, because it's a big campaign. I get a sense it's perhaps not going to happen. What are the chances, do you think?
I have a feeling I'm going to be fielding one or two of these. I don't know is the answer. I mean, you know, get 100,000 people to sign the online petition and Parliament has to debate it, but that's about as far as the legal mechanism goes. If the government, I mean, I don't even know that the government can mandate the national broadcaster to show it. I'm not sure that that's quite how it works. I'm not entirely sure with the mandate of the BBC whether or not the Minister for Culture, Media and Sport can actually tell the BBC what to put on. So it might be better to just direct all inquiries to the Director General of the BBC.
But Edward, if not that film, what it's calling for, in a sense, is for a national emergency briefing from the government. And what do you think of the chances that that could happen, that we could influence the government to come up with... We all used to see party political broadcasts, and we all used to see public information films. A lot of us are the generation where we used to see films that really influenced our attitude towards water safety and things, which seem to have disappeared. What are the chances that this could be a national emergency briefing?
Well, look, I mean, first of all, there's two elements of that, which is what can you force the government to do a national emergency briefing? So we, the Liberal Democrat MP Ros Savage, won the private member's bill in the last parliament. She brought forward the climate and nature bill, which, as with everything that the Liberal Democrats do in Parliament, the government said, no, that was a stupid idea, stupid Liberal Democrats, stupid, be quiet, and quashed it. And then, as invariably also happens, they quietly adopted most of what we asked for. Ed Miliband said, no, we're not going to do that. They quashed the bill. One of the big asks in the bill was that the minister came to Parliament once a year and gave an update on how the government was doing, or the country was doing, against our Paris climate targets. And 2 weeks after squashing the bill, he came to Parliament and gave an update on how we were doing on our climate targets and promised to do it every year thereafter. So we don't get the credit, but we do get to move the dial occasionally. So look, you can achieve these things, absolutely. But often it has to be something that the government wants to do.
Can we take another question? A lady halfway back. Just wait for the microphone again, if you would, just so we can all hear.
Yeah, I think one of our problems with the way Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. One of the problems with the way our government is run is it's very short-termism, and they think about climate change and so on as being something that's a long distance in the future, and so if they do something now, they think it's going to be very costly, and with the problems with the economy and everything, and the cost of living and so on, they think it'd be very unpopular. So they don't want to do anything that's unpopular, and it's only going to happen, be a problem a long time in the future. So, I mean, the impression I get is that all the solutions are out there, but nobody's listening. And they don't appreciate the importance and the urgency of it all, you know? So I think, what can we do to force this issue to become higher up the agenda? Because it's really a low down. And one of the things I've heard recently is that there was a report that came out from the Ministry of Defence, I think, about security, which was saying that our environmental issues are a real problem for security, amongst other things. And that was largely hidden. And it's only because of people asked for the it to come out, you know, through... I've forgotten the name of it. But, you know what I'm talking about. So how can we get the government to change?
Can I... Well, Giles, do you want to respond to that? I'd like to hear from Nick, and maybe on that, on a local government level as well, because we've heard from Edward already, but Giles...
Can I just make a comment first? I mean, I think we were all in a position where we felt that climate change was something that was out there in the future, and that we didn't really have to consider it now. And I think what really came across to me on the film was that it really is something that's happening now. The floods, the heat waves, the effects on national security, it's not something for the future, it's absolutely immediate. And that brings us to what can happen now. And the other point I'd make is that, you know, it's very easy to get into the train of everything has to be solved by the government and that we rely on the government to do everything. You know, there are, you know, 80 million people almost in this country. We are individuals. We have an influence. We can actually make things happen. So I think I would say that we really need to encourage everybody to try and see what we personally can do. It's not an abdication of responsibility. We still have to have councils and parliaments to back us up and do the things at an international level. But there are so many things that we can do personally that will make a substantial difference. So at Dorset Cairn, for example, we have a couple of community energy projects where we can really support communities to become self-sufficient in energy and reduce their costs. You know, we've got people surveying the countryside, looking at the state of of Dorset's hedges. We've surveyed 130 kilometres of hedges in Dorset, and there's a 10-year project there to restore these fantastic ecological corridors. You know, there are really things that you can get involved with which will make a difference.
Nick, can I ask you to maybe respond on whether you feel that within Dorset Council there's sometimes that lack of urgency, not from yourself necessarily, but from within the council, and also perhaps, taking Giles' point, how the council can empower individuals to have influence. What are the mechanisms you might be able to bring to bear to empower individuals?
So I would disagree with the urgency. We are taking it very urgently. So back in 2019, so Dorset Council has only been in existence since 2019, as many of you all know. The very first meeting of Dorset Council, myself and Councillor Paul Kimber, who's Labour ward member for Portland, we suspended standing orders and we declared a climate emergency. We weren't the first council by any means to do so, but we felt it was important that we should start off Dorset Council with a clean sheet. And to give credit to the previous administration, which ran until 2024, they did run with it. And a lot of stuff, the positive stuff we have now is down to them. And then, you know, again, in the first council meeting of the new administration, which I lead, we declared a nature emergency. Again, we weren't the first, but we've embedded that in everything we do. And if you follow our committees and our cabinets and our full councils, every single paper that comes before us has a climate wheel. It's a climate and nature wheel now, and it tells you as a member who's going to be voting on it exactly what the impact that has, the policy you're voting on has on climate and nature. And in terms of what we're doing, we're not doing short-term stuff. You know, we have elections in 2029. A lot of the stuff we're doing will have an impact way, way past that. In terms of stuff we're doing on the green economy and the blue economies through the Dorset Clean Energy Supercluster, we have people we're employing going around the country, getting people to invest in Dorset because we have a huge opportunity in offshore wind, we have a huge opportunity in hydrogen storage, regardless of your view on hydrogen storage, and Giles and I disagree on that considerably. But we are looking at that. There's a huge opportunity for our economy, and it's not just about climate, it's not just about carbon, it's also making the lives of our residents better by providing quality jobs and high-paid jobs. So a lot of the stuff we're doing is not short-term at all. It's putting in place stuff that will last, and I'll just finish with, so the local nature recovery strategy, which is a government-led policy, which councils have to basically produce and implement. So Dorset Council, together with our partners in BCP, have produced one for Dorset. It involved several years of work. It involved consulting with landowners, NGOs, Dorset Wildlife Trust, RSPB, Natural England, Forestry England, you name it, they're involved. If they're involved in nature in some way, they had a say, and now we're delivering on it. We've started the delivery board, and we're kicking off, and you know, the great big Dorset Hedge, or I always get that wrong, is one of the parts of that. So we're not standing still, we take it really seriously, and we are embedding it in everything we do as a council.
Thanks. I'm going to go into Roland there.
Thank you very much. I think the panel's points are very impressive, and thank you very much for coming along this evening and making those points to support the film. My idea, I'm a Dorset councillor. I became a Dorset councillor in order to fight exactly this sort of fight. And if you are in a village, I think if you go onto your parish council, that is an excellent thing to do if you want to have influence. Even if it's a bit chaotic and you don't like some of the people on it, it's worth being there to actually steer it in the direction we would like to see it going in. Get onto your town council, get onto the county council, because we're all getting very old. We need younger people to replace us. But you could then be helping Nick and Ed and all the people in front of us we're all politicians in one way or another, or part by one. to do what we want them to do. And I think that would be a really major contribution. I have 12 parishes in my ward, which is the Winterbourne ward. We have serious pollution problems with the sewage running into the Winterbourne, and we have serious flooding problems as well, which we've just about managed to cope with in the last 12 months, but it's very hit and miss at the moment. So these are the things you could be dealing with as a member of a parish council or a town council or the Dorset Council.
Thanks, Roland. It was interesting that you used the phrase there, help them to do these things, rather than just always thinking of it as something adversarial and beating them up to do these things. Actually get involved and help them to do these things. But be involved, I think, is the message there. There was another couple of questions. The gentleman at the back in the cap.
Thank you. I was intrigued, right? It's a very impressive piece. I've watched all of the other, the full piece. I'd encourage everybody else to go and watch the full briefings. But something that I think everybody in this room will probably do everything they can to make most of that come into effect. But you can't get away, as I think the military chap said, you have to deal with the issue straight in front of you. The UK does contribute to global warming. I think the figure is just under 1%, and four countries in the world contribute 2/3 of the global pollution, in China, Russia, India, and the USA. Are we just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic here? That some of this could very well get to the point where we can make all these changes. Hopefully we can do all of this, but isn't the real elephant in the room that that's going to make a 1% difference? So we could still be in a position where our food systems fail because the Gulf Stream stops and we're not influencing that. I'd love to hear your comments on that.
Edward, I think.
Okay, I'll take this. And funnily enough, this afternoon spent an hour on doing a Zoom call with a PhD student who's doing a dissertation on exactly this subject. Let me start from a different place. I love the briefing. I've watched it several times now. The problem with the Q&As afterwards is that it kind of sets the tone. And the tone is doomerism. I always say the thing about being an environmentalist and being a liberal democrat is you've got to be a glutton for punishment and an eternal optimist, and I am both of those things. I am not a doomerist when it comes to the environment. I genuinely believe we are capable of facing the challenge in front of us. And yes, we have left it way too late. And yes, the mountain is high to climb. But I genuinely believe we can do it. We are one of the most innovative countries. I spend a lot of time with climate tech startups, seeing the wonderful things we can do. I had a meeting the other day with a company that has found a way to produce pure, clean, renewable energy out of the waste products of desalination plants at a rate that is four times more than the energy required to run that desalination plant. You know where we have desalination plants? In really hot places with no water. We are going to change the world in the next 20 years because the exponential S-curve of the uptake of technology is so rapid now. You know, we went from the first internal combustion engine car arriving in the UK in 1895 to the 1960s where the car was ubiquitous. At some point in the 1960s, we realised that better than having a petrol pump every mile was having a car that could go 400 miles. And so we started doing that. We have achieved that in less than 20 years with electric cars. It is phenomenal the way the technology is helping us advance. The problem with your argument, and I don't disagree with your premise, is it's whataboutery, and I refuse to engage in whataboutery when it comes to an issue as important as climate change. The reason why the cost of a solar panel has come down by 1,500% is because China is developing so much renewable technology so fast that by the middle of this century, 85% of all of the renewable energy in the world will be generated in China. These guys are at the forefront of this. Their emissions peaked last year and will go down every year thereafter. Half a dozen states in America operate entirely on renewable energy most days already. So regardless of what Trump says, they are cracking ahead. Why? Because renewable energy is cheaper than every single alternative form of energy. It just makes commercial sense. I am at my heart a free marketeer. The reason why people are buying electric cars now, and why if you go to a second-hand car dealership today, they will tell you the biggest problem they have is not being able to get hold of enough second-hand cars to meet demand. The reason why people are buying electric cars today is because last year we passed the inflection point when an electric car became cheaper than an internal combustion engine. That is the market responding. We will get there. Right now it looks difficult and it looks really hard, but we are going to get there, and the change is going to be so rapid and so fast, and I'm 100% confident we're going to get there. That doesn't mean that the political pressure and the societal pressure should in any way abate, especially in a world where the political consensus on this has been fractured by people on the right who are doing it purely for their own economic and political benefit. We have to keep the pressure up, but please, I beg you, do not succumb to doomerism on this. This is the time to be optimistic.
Gentlemen at the back, if you would.
Yeah, my question to the panel is there anything that we can do to bring this to where I think the target audience should be, and into schools and colleges? I think that is where this really needs to be shown to not only concern them, but to infuse them. This is a generation that are going to be stepping into this sort of career if we make these changes.
Before we go to the panel, maybe could I ask whether anybody in the audience has experience of that in education, who might have experience of bringing that into schools?
I know they're going to do a showing in July of exactly this.
Okay, that's positive. That was there's going to be a showing of this in July.
Can I just add to that? Sorry, I'm actually holding the mic.
Yeah, Connie.
That was actually organised by the students in that case. Right. So because our youth council are some of the people who organised it, so it didn't come from the teachers; it came directly from the kids.
Just very quickly, we're holding a youth COP
before our main COP at Kingston Moorhead, which is absolutely brilliant. It's going to involve a lot of local schools, and it follows on from other COPs, which have youth COPs, which have been organised by the schools themselves. And we probably have somebody in the audience here who might even attend.
I would just add, so Dorset Council, through our services, we have a climate ambassador, ambassador programme for schools, and our ambition is to have a climate ambassador or two in every single school, regardless of whether it's an LEA one, which aren't that many left, or it's academy. And so Wey Valley's got two, and I'm pretty sure, I don't know if Thomas Hardy has yet, but essentially they're teachers who are passionate about climate and nature emergencies, who are facilitating education of their children and to get their message across.
Thanks,
Ben.
I think education is so important. I mean, just going back to medicine, William Mayo said, if doctors get it right, you don't need doctors. And I think if education gets it right, we can solve so many health problems in society. My one concern is we mustn't be negative. I think that is the problem, that we've got to be positive, that change can happen. And I go back, I used to be optimistic. I used to think happiness is important. But I think hope is the most important word that we've got to have, that there is solutions. And I think we've got to be careful not to be too negative. Hope's there. Bring back education.
Sorry, just say that the Eco School project in Damers here in Dorchester is, well, winner of the best Eco School 2-3 years ago. So that's a wonderful way to be positive in schools. And I think perhaps this film, and maybe in an edited way, could go forward. But it is a bit. We might end up with everybody being vegan and terrified. So.
I'll come to you next. Oh, sorry. Oh, is there a hand up there?
Yes.
So just before you. Sorry, I didn't see you.
How can the council implement what went every 4 years? If that makes sense. If they change every 4 years.
Okay. How can the council have influence when it's in constant change because they're re-elected, new people, so maybe we can give both Nick and Les a chance.
Yeah, as I said before, a lot of the stuff we're doing, we're not looking at getting re-elected, or we are looking at getting re-elected in 2029, but that's all been the to be fair. But you know, the stuff we're doing on climate and nature is just stuff we need to do, and it's the right thing to do to protect our residents. And you know, heat is going to be a huge issue for us in terms of we have literally the oldest population by age, by average, in the whole of the UK, and arguably the oldest in the world if you discount Japan, or maybe we beat Japan. We have an elderly population, and as Michael would say, you know, heat, and as we saw from the film, affects elderly people more. It causes death, and it causes premature death, and we need to stop that. And reducing the 2 degrees is going to happen. I think I think everybody's fairly sure that 2 degrees will happen. That's going to be 2050. The stuff we're doing now will still be in effect and making a difference when we get to 2050. And you know, I might be on that planet, on this planet by then. But and it will be having councils, Dorset councils, have been a lot. But we are doing things that we're putting in place that will outlast the 4 year or 5 year terms.
Les, do you think there are ways in which the town council can embed things so much that turnover of councils would be immune
to it? I think both councils, whether you're talking at Dorset Council or any of the town councils, something is important to this, you'll start the work and then all future councils will continue it. We saw that was declared when a climate emergency was declared in 2019 under a previous administration. They started the work off, and there were some really good councillors and officers driving that forward. When we changed in 2024 to the current administration, the work continued. Yes, it was ramped up a bit more, as we need to do. And hopefully, in 2029, when the next elections take place, that will continue, whichever the administration is in place. It is one of the frustrating things about politics, that the things tend to swing backwards and forwards, depending on which party is in power. but I suspect this will continue. It's so important, it's for all of us. That one of the things that's perhaps for me, I mean, it's been really informative tonight, a little bit disappointing is the age demographics of the crowd here. How many people are here under 50?
Two, three, four.
I rest my case.
Les is being too polite, and as an elected politician, I will make the point that if you want action on climate change to continue, don't elect people who don't believe in climate change.
Gentlemen,
we'll need to make this our last question.
I can make mine quick so we can both have a go. So the main thing I'm taking away from this, well, one of the main things, is plant-based. So I'm wondering, are there any dairy, beef or sheep farmers in the room? And a lot of my family are dairy or beef farmers. We had we're all members of Green Martinstown here, and we had a talk by a young chap called Will Stretfield, who's a sustainability lead for Ultec, which is an agri-food sustainability sort of advisory body. He's apolitical. He is there just to investigate the facts, and he said that actually. So there are plenty of advantages to beef. Cattle can be grazed on land that would be unsuitable for crops. Sort of low quality food waste can be turned into high quality protein. It's just not that clear cut. Like, large swathes of the rainforest are being felled to grow soya, which is like a super productive, versatile crop, but that's really harmful. I mean, and I'm just thinking, gosh, like, so I drink lots of milk and I do eat beef. Like, should I just not be? Am I contributing to climate change massively by drinking milk? Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's no clear cut answer. So the question is, just what do you think?
Let's hand over to Les, as a former farmer.
I'm a former farmer, dairy and sheep farmer. I'm also the vice chair on the Dorset Council Farms Panel, and we've got about 6,000 acres of our own that Dorset Council owns. And it's an interesting question, but farming cattle, sheep can work alongside being vegans and being vegetarians. It does work, as has been said, that the areas of land that you can't grow crops on. But actually, we do need our animals as well. We do need some of our farm animals because literally the poo that they excrete will help nature, biodiversity. You do need that mix in there. Maybe the balance needs to change a little bit, but there's no reason why we should completely give up our animals or our milk or anything like that, eating those, but just the balance needs to change there. Our county farms are trying to make more of a showcase for what the council can do. We're energising our young farmers, and it's really, really inspirational to see the number of young people coming into farming that are with climate change and the things that they can do to help the environment is part of their package. And that is really enlightening. We're hoping that we can open up some of those farms in due course for people to see what they're doing. But that is actually part of the interview process and application process. What are they going to do about the environment and the climate and help the council to have those would be our showcase for what goes on in Dorset.
Thanks, Les. Michael, did you want to comment on that as well?
We're all interconnected. And I think whatever food we eat, and I often say to my patients say to me, what's the most important food that we should eat? And I say, let me finish before you think I've gone a bit odd or odder than I am. I don't think the food that you eat is important. What is very important is the food that your food eats, which goes back to what we said here in the film, is the power of the soil, the power of the water that feeds the soil, and the power of the air. So I think the important thing is everything's interconnected. I'm not going to go into the debate of vegetarian versus vegan and meat eaters, etc. But I think where your food comes from and think the interconnection. Because I always remember my wife said to me, go and buy an asparagus. And I went to a supermarket and the asparagus had been grown in Peru, covered in cling film, expiry date yesterday, and was about as big as my little finger. Then I went out to the farmer's market and there was an asparagus cut at the correct angle, completely different. So I think of your source of your food as well as the food that you're eating. But I think the other important thing we've got to think sadly about the economy, which is another issue, which, yeah.
So just one quick comment from Edward. Do you want to say one quick thing on that?
Actually, the Lord Lieutenant has already sort of touched upon it, but just to emphasise the point he was making, which is that actually I don't mind what you eat. There's plenty of scientific evidence that says we shouldn't eat the amount of meat that we eat, but, you know, that's fine. Lifestyles change. The problem is where we're getting it from. People aren't buying it from their local butcher or from their local farmer. They're flying it in from Australia. So they're flying the food in from a place with lower welfare food standards, with greater use of steroids and growth hormones and all of those things, the environmental impact of flying it all the way over here, and then selling it at a point that's below the cost of production in the UK. So, you know, I don't mind what you eat, I just prefer you to buy local.
So, it's always very difficult because there are always many more questions.
We've
than
got
we
one
can,
more.
There is one lady has been waiting a long time. I'll go back there. So I'm sorry, sir. We've got to cut it off after this. I'm really sorry. It's always so difficult. There's so much to say.
Hello. There's been a lot of talk about what can we do, and I think one of the things that we can all do to improve the environment and the climate emergency is changing how we travel. I was delighted to see Edward Morello speak this week in a parliamentary committee about improving rural transport and particularly active travel. Given that 70% of our journeys are under 5 miles or less, then active travel routes are really important. So what is the panel doing to improve active travel routes and connecting up the existing ones and creating more?
Nick, do you want to start on that one?
It's actually, we have a thing called the Local Transport Plan. It actually went to a review committee again today. It'll go to Cabinet in 2 weeks' time. Active travel is really important. Bus travel, and particularly in rural transport, is very, very important to this administration. One of the things we're doing at the moment is engaging with our towns and parishes through an exercise we're calling Community Conversations. Part of that is how we all work together to make rural transport better. As Edward mentioned in his very good speech, I watched this afternoon on Facebook. What you can do is you see in Bedminster, for example, what's happening in Lyme Regis and Bridport with they're running a shuttle bus so people in Lyme Regis can go out in Bridport and vice versa. It turns out the closing the A35 overnight is not a good idea by national highways, but we're trying to solve that. And we will be making an announcement soon as Dorset Council about a significant investment in terms of multiples of millions in rural transport, because we need our rural buses to be better. Interestingly, we're running a trial on Julian's Bridge in Wimborne at the moment, and if you watch the Facebook posts, you'd think the sky had fallen in. But I think the thing I'm taking away from that is that so many people are driving very short journeys. There's lots of parents complaining that it's taking a long time to drive the kids to school. I'm thinking, why are the kids not on a school bus? you multiply the number of people who are driving across the Julian's Bridge every day to Corfmullen Secondary School. You could get rid of most of that by sticking them all on the bus, and we should be looking at doing that better. So we will be investing in rural transport and quickly, because I'll just be honest, it's one of our election things for 2029.
So we're just going to come this way via Edward to ask. No, Charles.
I was just going to finish with something local, because it's something which our local Dorchester Transport Action Group is spending a lot of time trying to support new active travel routes in Dorchester. So with Damer's Eco School, we've been trying to get a new route between Dorchester and Poundbury, which is safe and separated, which encourages people to be able to active travel. We've got ideas for a circular ring route for pedestrians and cyclists around the centre of Dorchester. And I know that Becky, who asked the original question, is doing fantastic work around the village of Loders, trying to open an off-road route along the old railway track between Loders and Bradpole. So there's some great stuff going on.
I can't believe you named the project that shall not be named. I was not going to say it. But I was going to make a point in reference to it, which is that the world is full of people who think saying no is a useful contribution. I would much rather be on the side of people who say, yes, let's give it a go. All right. And the problem with social media is that all it does is give voice to the people who say no. And we desperately need more people saying, yes, let's give it a go. So when the council is proposing a trailway or a community bus, there is invariably going to be stories on Facebook that 20,000 cyclists a day will be going down the trailway. The bus stop will cause congestion all the way to Sherburn. It won't, but the voices will be the ones who are shouting the loudest. So please, when we started this, we talked about what all of us can be doing. And one of the things we can all be doing is supporting positive change and shouting for it. And don't let us be drowned out by the people who just say no. So if you can do anything for me, it's please. The council is trying to do so many wonderful things, as is the Climate and Action Network. And they need your support in every way, shape or form, but not least of which is online and with your neighbours and spreading the good word and saying, you know, that we are the silent majority, all right? Let's stop being silent.
Yeah, thank you on that. On that very positive note, I'd just like to say a huge thank you to the panel for taking the time to be here, and a round of applause, please, again for the panel.
Just a quick thank you to everybody for coming, and a good night from me and the team that have put this on.
No, very quickly, I've just been informed that the screening of the next screening of the People's Emergency Briefing at Thomas Hardy School is on the 13th of July. It's not just for the school members, it's open to the general public. So that's one thing you can take away is, you know, urge someone, get your friends and family to book a couple of tickets and go and see it there. And I'm sure there'll be a good debate after that one. And it's being screened at many other places. I think the Copper's screening it as well. So there's lots of places to look out for it.
And there's going to be a screening in Martinstown coming up in July, one in Bradford Peveril. There's a lot of villages, there's a lot of parish councils.
June the 25th.
There are a lot of villages, a lot of parish councils who are now starting to organise screenings. So lots of opportunities for you to get your friends and people you know to go along to a screening at a very local level where they can talk about the things that they can be doing very locally. I will send you an email over the weekend to say thank you for coming, and I will actually send you a flyer that's got links that you can actually see where all the screenings are happening. How you can organise a screening yourself if you want to. And as you leave tonight, we're going to hand out some flyers. We haven't had mention from the panel about all the brilliant things that are going on in Dorset. There's so much going on, it's just incredible. And please have a look at it. Think about things that you're interested in and what you might like to find out a bit more about and perhaps get a bit involved in. So at the reflections, closing reflections, really is for everybody to think about what they can now be going away from here tonight and thinking about doing, because that's it. Chris Packham said it. It's over to us. We've got to be doing something. So thank you for coming, and good night.